Hello, everybody, and we're now on edition 183, Stan, of the Frankenstein chat. It's amazing. And I'm really delighted to say that Adrian Lyons has stepped in because the guest for this week was unable to join us. So Adrian's been a guest before, and I've worked with Adrian over many years now. But hello, Adrian.
Hi, Frank. Hi, Stan. I hope the audience aren't too disappointed to be having me today after that great build-up.
I know. Well, I think the preliminary discussion that we had prior to recording suggests that it might be quite a lively chat. But for those of you watching on the video, there is a beautiful building or a block of buildings behind Adrian there. So just tell us a little bit about where that
okay,
is.
Okay, just let you skip the full picture there. So this is my favourite hotel in the world. It's Ebner's Welthof, which is on Lake Fuschl am See, just outside Salzburg, about 10 miles away from Salzburg in Austria. It's lovely.
I remember I visited Salzburg once, and because of the Sound of Music connection, and yeah, it's just an amazing place, and it's wonderful to actually walk down the tree-lined area where, you know, the Sound of Music was created.
Yeah, and Mirabelle Gardens.
Oh yeah, it's just having seen that film, well, at least my wife, I don't know how many times she's seen it, it's her favorite film. But
quickly,
anyway,
quickly backing away from admitting that he likes the Sound of Music.
Oh, Stan, I've been rumbled. Actually, I have to say, my favorite film is The Witness, with Harrison Ford, and that for me, it's like one of those moments where I watched it on TV and I just got into it. But I've watched that a number of times. I think that's a fact. Go on, Stan. What's your favourite film?
Hobson's Choice. See, Salford through and through.
Yeah, Adrian, this is on the spur of the moment. Have you got one?
Yeah, I mean, I've probably, like you, watched Sound of Music many times. Like your wife, sorry, Frank. But I watched the Sound of Music many times. But, the trouble is it's not very professional to blub through it, is it? That's what you're trying to do.
Hey, Adrian, I know you've been a guest here before, but is it worth just introducing yourself for those who have joined more recently the Frankenstein chat as to who you are and how you know Stan and I?
Oh, yeah, that's a thought, isn't it? So, Adrian Lyons, I was one of Her Majesty's inspectors for just over 16 years with Ofsted. During that time, I held a number of roles in the organisation. I was the National Lead for Economics, Business and Enterprise for quite a few years, covering a wide area, not just A-level economics and business, but wider remits like financial capability and work-related learning. And for some of that time, I was also the union rep, the FDA union convener, which represents, at the time that I took it on, it was probably representing about 75% of HMI, and by the time I left, it was representing 95% of HMI. I'd love to say that was due to my brilliant skills, but actually, it was all down to the chief inspector. I'll give her credit.
And I have to say, the connection here, those of you who have watched or listened over the last couple of weeks, my brother passed away, but he was the FDA rep for a while in Estyn. So I don't know if you met professionally in that capacity, but I seem to recall that you told me that you did actually meet my brother, I think at an event where they were talking about sort of how you might record electronically the evidence gathered on inspections. I think, is that true?
Yeah, that's right. Ofsted was supposed to learn when they decided they wanted to bring in electronic evidence gathering. The idea was Estyn had already been doing it for some time and Ofsted were going to learn from Estyn, but of course Ofsted had to do its own thing, which didn't turn out very successfully.
Yeah, and the Estyn solution, I think, was very cheap and developed in-house.
Yeah, that's right.
With just, I think, a couple of colleagues who were given...
But, I mean, the interesting thing about Estyn, that the Welsh Inspectorate, is that they do things differently to Ofsted. And because, I mean, the FDA union actually is really useful for the fact that the union has an Ofsted branch, has an Estyn branch, has an Education Scotland branch, Education Northern Ireland branch. And staff in the inspectorate would never intermingle, but through the FDA, we did meet up at union events. And during the pandemic, when we were all locked down, we decided it'd be really useful to have regular Zoom meetings, the national reps from the different inspection organisations, and that was very revealing. And Ofsted would hate it if they knew. Oh, they probably do know.
It's funny because when I joined as an HMI, one of the first events that I went on was I was sent off to Bielefeld in Germany to undertake a service inspection, and it was led by an HMI from Ofsted, but there were colleagues from the Welsh Inspectorate and from the Scottish Inspectorate and I think from the Northern Ireland Inspectorate as well. And it was really interesting the way that we all came together, even with our own sort of methodology. But it sort of took me back to probably the way that HMI used to inspect before Ofsted, where there was a very general, broad discussion about the findings, without a very sort of strict framework, because obviously these colleagues were coming with slightly different focus and a different way of working. Yeah, so anyway. Can I, while we're on to Ofsted, before we get to what's caught our eye, quite interested in your views on the Big Listen, Adrian, which is the survey that's been undertaken by Ofsted in terms following the tragic, well, the coroner's report is probably the way to describe it, regarding Ruth Perry's death. And I'm just interested to know what your feelings are on the Big Listen.
Well, it Ofsted is very experienced in consultations, and the Big Listen follows on a long line of Ofsted consultations where they ask the questions to generate the answers that they want. And I mean, the questions in the Big Listen are missing the big questions, really, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
The really important fundamental things just aren't there. So yeah, put out a questionnaire, get some feedback which shows that everybody loves what we're doing, and that's the Ofsted way.
Yeah. I mean, have you looked at it, Stan? Have you had a chance?
Only briefly, but I got angry at the fact that I couldn't actually, if I'd wanted, I haven't didn't put any answers to it, but I just felt as though the answers I wanted to give, there wasn't the opportunity to do that. And at that point, you just think, it's yes, Prime Minister, isn't it? And the how do we make people want to do this? We ask them these questions, and then we use that, as Adrian says, we use that data to show that we were right all along, and press on.
If for colleagues who haven't used it, sorry, Adrian, who haven't used it, it's a bit like they ask questions like, should cars drive on the same side of the road? That's the sort of thing, and it doesn't ask questions, as I think Adrian was saying, about grades, whether grades are a good idea. It doesn't actually ask questions about whether sufficient consideration is given to the school's own self-evaluation. The importance of that as a evidence source. It doesn't talk about the use of data. It doesn't talk about lesson observations. It doesn't talk about engagement with governors. In that way, it just avoids, for me, some of the most pressing questions within the system.
I did fill it in, but I found I couldn't actually answer the response boxes because the responses weren't anything I wanted to say. So I just used the free text to say
Right.
what I wanted to say. I don't know if that will actually ever be recorded, even, because I suspect that the numbers are so great to actually make it
Yeah.
impossible.
I think it's funny, when we've done this, I mean, I've been involved in this for the development of frameworks. And I'm responsible here, so I'm revealing stuff that that in a way I'm a little bit ashamed of now. But what happened, I can recall, although I can't recall the detail of it, I do recall when we consulted on a framework in the past, there was an element of the responses which were overwhelmingly negative. And what happened was Ofsted were determined, and that's not me so much as Ofsted, the senior managers above me, were determined that what was being proposed would go ahead. So they were quite selective in choosing the group that they referred to, and they invariably would go back to the parents and carers' wishes, because that is the least, I don't mean this in a negative way, but the least professional element of the responses, the least informed group about how inspection works. And they would draw on that as the lever to get that issue through, because invariably, the parents and carers would be more positive about something which was phrased or framed in such a way that you could but disagree, but could but agree with it, that they would use that as the mechanism to get, to push the proposal through. So I fear for me that, unless and there's a clue here, but unless somebody else steps up with an alternative, we do need an alternative survey, I think, in order to have something to contest what Ofsted are going to report from their findings. So yeah, more on this in due course, perhaps. Anyway, okay. Good week, Stan. Have you had a good week?
I have, yeah. It's not been bad. I'm just trying to remain calm now because I'm immediately after this, I've got to go and have my blood pressure tested. So I need to be relaxed through this and not get irate at Ofsted or anybody else.
Good luck with that, Stan.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's kick off then. What's caught your eye this week, Stan?
A report from the Institute of Fiscal Studies on the benefits or not of SureStart. SureStart for me was a fantastic start to education for young people, early years people and families. And I did get the pleasure of visiting a couple of centres when I was an advisor and was blown away by the connections that SureStart Centre made with all other agencies and how it pulled them together and how you would see 16-year-olds who were pregnant at the same time as mothers with small children who were possibly their mothers and agencies working with everybody. And I just walked away from it thinking this is how it should be. And of course, it ended when Michael Gove pulled the funding for it. But this says, and it's only the first two paragraphs I want to just read, access to SureStart centres between the ages of 0 and 5 significantly improved the educational achievement of children with benefits lasting till at least GCSE age 16. Children who lived within a short distance of a SureStart centre for their first 5 years performed 0.8 grades better in their GCSEs. These are average impacts across children living near to the centres, regardless of which family they are. But this, I think, there are much larger impacts for those from poorer backgrounds and from those from non-white backgrounds. By the time they took their GCSEs, effects were six times higher for those eligible for free school meals than those not eligible. And they go on, the report goes on to show the cost effectiveness of it in terms of extra, well, the fact that the children who'd attended them, or not necessarily attended them, actually, they use a distance from it as a measure, 2.5 kilometres, pram pushing distance, they describe it as. But there's benefits in the reduction in special educational needs and in the immediate rise with more children being assessed, but then by the age of 11 and 16, between a 3% and 10% drop in children needing that support because it had been put in early, and the financial benefits outweigh the costs. So I just think for those people who worked in those SureStart centres and worked so brilliantly in them, there's something here that said, yeah, you were right with what you were doing. You were right to say it was working. And, whether the next government will decide to do something similar, I don't know.
Well, the current government's decided to do family hubs, which to me feel like the sort of cheap version of Sure Centres.
Yeah,
But what?
and did you know somebody had already, somebody in the government, I think, had
Yes,
already got the website Family Subs.
they had, yeah, and that was then promoted by the Children's Commissioner as a, one of the recommendations in a report that she produced. It all felt a little bit too close, but I don't know what Adrian's view here is, but I dug out the 2012 report made by Ofsted to Parliament about the effectiveness of Sure Start centres, and it talked about quantitative data does not paint a strong picture of regular attendance by target families or of improved outcomes for those target groups. Now, that suggests to me that in the short term, it was difficult for Sure Start centres to get that sort of strong, linked, evaluation. And it's made me think again about, well, actually, I think if you ask nine people out of 9 out of 10 people, they would say, yeah, Sure Start, probably going to be a good idea. At the time, probably more people thought it was a good idea. But actually, what we've got here is the fact that those Sure Start centres couldn't prove their immediate impact. The impact in a very short period of time was probably beyond them. And so, in effect, we should have just sat with it and said, well, it's probably going to work. We just need to give it more time. But there was a at the time a political drive to, because I remember doing survey visits, Adrian, as part of that, where the hypothesis produced by the lead HMI was that actually they've been taken over by the middle classes. That, is
Yeah,
that
yeah, I
true? Is
remember that.
that true? And
Well,
actually,
that just winds me up completely.
I know.
My answer to that is, so what? If you've got an organisation that's mixing disadvantaged people with middle class people, having the same effect on the church, it'll have more effect on the disadvantaged than it ever will on the middle class, and you're closing some gaps there in the community. So that just really winds me up.
I knew it would. I mean,
And the other thing
it's a
is just,
hypothesis. I can understand why perhaps government asked Ofsted to undertake an evaluation. They could openly have said, well, are the targeted groups actually being involved here? Or actually, is this just, cheap childcare support for those that actually can afford it who perhaps don't need it? But I think the point you made is entirely valid, Stan.
fix that. That's what they don't do. They don't say, well, fix that, make a charge for those that aren't eligible for free school meals, and use that money to pump back into the centre. It's just right. That's done my blood pressure no good at all,
But
thanks.
Stan, it's made because I'm currently drafting an article about, should we go more on hunches? And hunches based upon a sort of a fairly deep level of understanding about the sector. This thing about the Sure Starts children's centres, the hunch was this is going to work if we give it time. There's no harm in actually, evaluating elements of that. But as a sort of targeted policy position, I think that there were actors out there who were trying to find ways to actually stop it. And I think Ofsted have played into that. I mean, their report to Parliament is not glowing. Some elements of it are, but it's highlighting short-termism, really, or even medium-termism attitude to this, when in fact we should just said, no, this is probably going to work if we give it time.
In my argument at the time was the expansion of it should have been somewhere for older teenagers, families with older teenagers to attend, who probably wouldn't want to be attending what was effectively a nursery base, and to base something then for families with older children. But of course, that would cost money. It says it costs 2.5 billion in
It's nothing, is it?
today's money.
I
We
don't
can
know
throw more than that at PPE, can't we, for a cost?
what. Well,
It's a very strange argument, this. It had most impact for middle class parents, because actually, isn't that true of the entire school system? So
I agreed. Adrian, what's caught your eye this week?
well, it's it's something that's kind of routine, really, in that Ofsted issued a subject report this week about RE. So not exactly huge headline news, although it has actually been covered in the press because there's the headline that Ofsted saying schools should do RE better. And I think that's just a statement of fact.
Do you think also because of the Michaela judgment, it's sort of had a little bit more, it probably landed
Yeah, I
for
guess so.
publicity purposes at a good time because it's sort of on people's mind about the place of religion or
In
faith and
schools,
stuff in schools.
yeah. I mean, that Michaela judgment was a was another one that I thought I might bring to the table today. But the reason I wanted to just mention the RE report is because I think, you know, there's nothing to disagree with in the RE report, really. It says the obvious in some ways that RE is not taught well in some schools. Pupils don't have a good broad knowledge of RE, and you can see this actually. If you watch a high level quiz program like University Challenge, for example, whenever there's questions about religion, there's blank looks, and these people who have benefited the most from the knowledge-rich curriculum that is central to the system these days, they don't have any knowledge about religion, and they're quite proud of it. But actually, that leaves a gaping hole in our cultural tradition, because so much of our culture is actually based on particularly the Christian religion. But perhaps more importantly, it does not equip people to live well in modern Britain. But that's actually not the issue for me. The issue for me is, what's the evidence base for this? And I know it's what it says
Absolutely.
in the report in Annex A about 50 school visits, etc. But I was just thinking about how Ofsted inspects subjects. So just very briefly, when Ofsted was set up, the approach to inspection was big team of inspectors in school for a week, inspecting every subject in detail, in depth. And I was one of those jobbing inspectors back in those days, and before I became an HMI, recruited for subject expertise. That's what we were brought in for, and that's what we did. We spent all our time looking at the subject, and maybe on the last day we would look at an aspect like leadership and management or something. So that was done away with in 2005. The grand switch from Section 10 to Section 5, which actually sounds like inspection was halved, but it was more than that. It was down to two or three
Two or three
inspectors each school,
inspectors,
2 days.
yeah.
But subjects weren't to be looked at. It was those things that we used to just look at as a sort of afterthought on inspection: the aspects, leadership, management, personal development of pupils, etc. That was what the inspection was all about. And then
Just to help though, Adrian, at that point though, I think that there was also the subject and survey work,
it's exactly what I was coming
was
to.
it? Which is really, well, sorry, I take the script away from you.
No, it's okay. So Ofsted set up alongside that not looking on routine inspections at subjects, a specialist unit, the Curriculum Dissemination Division, to, as you say, Frank, look at subjects in depth. But that was done with subject specialists going into schools for a 2-day inspection, essentially, grading in exactly the same way as the inspection. As a general inspection. And then on the basis of 100 of those visits, coming up with a really well-informed State of the Nation report on the subjects. That was allowed to drop as Ofsted resources focused more on general inspections. And then a chief inspector, Amanda Spielman, comes along and decides that, oh, we're not looking at subjects, and comes up with this new framework based entirely on subjects, but subject deep dives. But the big difference between what they do now in terms of subject deep dives and what happened in the past is the subject specialist thing, that these deep dives are carried out by generalists. And when I'm going in supporting schools now, and head teachers start to talk to me about, well, if Ofsted come along, what subjects should I choose them to do a deep dive in? I have to say, well, actually, it's not your choice. It's the lead inspector's choice, number one. Number two, you might get a say in it. But if you get a say in it, hang on a minute, that means that the subject you've chosen to be looked at will not be looked at by anybody who knows what they're talking about, because the team's predetermined. And actually, the reality of how it works is that the lead inspector chooses some subjects to look at and says, okay, Inspector A, look at that one, Inspector B, look. There's absolutely no link. And again, this evolved too, because when the original plan was set forth for these subject deep dives, they were going to be done by subject specialists. And that would have made sense. And then Ofsted decided that actually that would be far too difficult to
Program.
program.
Yeah.
So the Director of Education at the time came up with this idea of having communities of subjects. So you would a humanities subject would be looked at by a humanities person, and a science stroke math subject would be looked at by a science stroke. Okay, that could work. That was too difficult to program too. So we'll keep the idea of the subject deep dives, but we'll have anybody who knows, who might be absolutely terrified of maths going and inspecting it. That's where we're at. There was a phrase in the RE report that talked about superficially broad curriculum often lack depth. And when I first read it, I thought, because I was just skimming through the report, when I first read it, I thought, oh, that's talking about the approach to the deep subject deep dives. But apparently not.
It's for me, it's how there is a requirement that I think there's still a requirement for a report to Parliament on the effectiveness of the English system, education system. And I think most people, talking about parents and carers, the general public, would be pretty shocked if they knew that actually the evidence for religious education from Ofsted this year is predominantly coming from about 50 visits. Because as Adrian Gray's work has shown, RE is a subject that's very, very rarely picked up for deep dives within the Section 5 arrangements.
Well, Adrian Gray did a survey of which subjects were picked for deep dives, and I mean, this just illustrates the randomness of it all. So in primary, so this is the year July 22 to March 23 was the time period, and in primary it was five deep dives out of 364 deep dives in that time. In secondary, by coincidence, it was five deep dives, but it was five out of 465 deep dives.
My question will be, was it the same inspector who that was their
That's a good
favourite?
question.
Well, it's funny you should say that, Stan, because the lead inspector's preference does. I mean, when I was leading inspections under this framework, I would give myself subjects that I was interested in. Business education is one that is quite rarely looked at, but it's sometimes looked at, and I suspect that is the same inspector.
The issue in primary, though, Stana and Adrian, is that I've heard that knowing that you're not going to be inspected on a Monday, you timetable the areas that you know you're weakest at on a Monday. And so, just particularly when you know you're in the window, the Ofsted window. So, again, this is sort of the negative impact of inspection on children's learning experiences, And you ensure that in the middle days, or the prime days for inspection, you're invariably, because I think on Adrian's list, history is one of the
Oh yeah,
areas that's,
it's in primary. It's reading, not surprisingly, comes out on top because you have to do a
you
deep
have to
dive in
do
reading in
that, yeah.
primary. Then it's maths is almost up there, 97, I think. And then history's next at 46%, and then comes geography at 27%. So yeah, it's reading maths and history if you're in primary.
And Adrian, I mean, you've got this business economics focus in your work. Looking at the requirement for the economy to develop, you know, it's staggering where computer science, technology of any sort, how infrequently those are focused in on during Ofsted inspections.
Well, again, Ofsted, when the framework came in, it was all about the curriculum, the curriculum, the curriculum. But it turns out that Ofsted has a very narrow view of the curriculum, despite actually when it came in talking about curriculum broadening, and we've got to make sure that primary schools are doing the full range of national curriculum, and we've got to make sure that there's a 3 year key stage three covering all the national curriculum requirements. Actually, it's quite a narrow curriculum. So there hasn't been anybody responsible for DT since the framework came in. There's still no curriculum guidance on that. Okay, I'll put my hands up, but I do have a vested interest here in that. As I say, I was the national lead for economics, business, and enterprise. That role was scrapped because that's not something that Ofsted are interested in. You can still do deep dives in that subject, but my subject area also, as was pointed out to me by the curriculum director in Ofsted when I was talking about enterprise. Oh, that's personal development, and personal development, you know, might get an hour and a half on an inspection if they're lucky, and so that goes into the whole area of how pupils are prepared for the world of work, work experience, careers education. It's all pretty superficial.
I think I mean, before I move on to mine, because I know we're running out of time here, but the issue also is around how all of these Ofsted subject reports fit together as a brick wall, because I think there was criticism in the RE report this week about the expectation as to how much time should be spent teaching it, and it appears that every specialist report, you know, is inching more and more minutes, more and more hours for their subject, and it doesn't look as though anybody in Ofsted has actually thought about how do all of these reports actually connect with each other. Because if we lay them all out, bearing in mind some of them haven't been produced yet, bearing them all of them out, there is simply not enough time in a school week or in a calendar year at school for them to deliver on all of the recommendations within these reports.
You remember, Frank, in the very first framework where you had to, that as a school, you had to identify how much time you were spending, what percentage of the time you were spending on the various subjects. And that was the biggest load of nonsense I've ever filled in myself and ever read in other people's evidence
It
papers.
breaks up, though, the idea that you can deliver a lot of this either with the depth in these subjects, the way that they're expected to, or that actually, heaven forbid, we might actually start thinking about areas of learning, you know, and consider how we deliver, you know, history or geography or whatever, you know, through an humanities theme, which I know is what's happened in Wales. But, you know, it really does start to erode for me. And the idea that all of this fits together and actually doesn't find a place for new areas. Like, for me, the green economy, that's a massive development opportunity for the country. You know, I'm not seeing the curriculum profiles changing, the geography curriculum changing to adapt to these growing opportunities. I'm not seeing, you know, probably there is a place for environmental studies, as and there may well be a GCSE in environmental studies, but very few schools, if there is, study it. But there needs to be much more focus on these areas if we're going to, you know, to find an economy that's actually fit for purpose going forward.
I would like to see it change to take into account how children learn. That curriculum that was based on how children learn, how their
Oh,
brains work.
careful there, Stan, because Ofsted would argue that the current framework's all about how children learn through cognitive
No,
science.
I think it's about how we teach as opposed to how children learn.
Well, that's for next week.
Yeah.
What's caught my eye, I just pick up on, I had a chat with Nick Brook yesterday, who's the CEO of Speakers for Schools. And Nick used to be a fairly senior officer in Ofsted during my time. But he was, prior to that, he was heavily involved in the NAHT union. And Nick, Speakers for Schools is about work experience. And it was just something he said that he's doing some work with Ernst Young about what hybrid work experience looks like. And he just mentioned we're starting to look at what AI can do in terms of a work experience for young people. So obviously it's at the moment, a number of schools still do the face-to-face stuff. A number of schools during the pandemic flipped it to being a more sort of virtual experience. But that's, for some young people, my view, and I think Nick's was the same, is that, that for some young people, they do need to actually shake hands with a colleague, know how to do that. All the sort of practical things about how you get to work and how you manage yourself and how you dress and all that's a really important element of it. But he was saying that Ernst Young are very interested in, that new component where you can actually provide a bit more of a realistic face-to-face experience through AI. It's not quite face-to-face, but you know what I mean? It can do more in terms of giving a real life experience for kids without actually having to visit the workplace, So I was just fascinated with, that development. Never thought about it in that way. So, yeah.
What are we talking 3D there? Are we talking virtual reality?
Yeah,
Okay.
they are.
Well,
So.
it's increasingly important that because the way people work has changed significantly. So schools are finding it a real challenge, not just the traditional challenge of finding enough work placements, but the fact that, well, actually, a lot of the work that our people do, they're doing at home and you're not going around to their house. So,
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just a little aside, Adrian, is I've said to Nick, when he does his school visits, can he email me as soon as he sees a lathe being used? And then, so there were two categories, when he sees a lathe and when he see it being used. And actually, you might say, well, going into robotics and things like that, those sorts of skills are perhaps not as may not be relevant for the future economy as they have been in the past. But if you're looking at personal satisfaction, enjoyment in life, a skill that you can use as a hobby or whatever, some of those skills are really useful. And there are times at home here when I wish I had a lathe and I wish I knew how to use it.
Like
You've got one.
my dad's shed has got a lathe and a milling machine in it. You are welcome to them if you want to get a large lorry and pick them up and send them to your house.
I'm not going to take off your dad's old lathe just to get rid of it out of your dad's shed. But yeah, I mean, it just gets to the heart of, what for me, it made me think about, well, the value of education, and it's not all about the economy. It is about personal satisfaction and enjoyment and what have you. So,
It's funny you should say that because this is totally unplanned. You had absolutely no idea I was
no
going to discuss
script at
this. If
all.
you're familiar with a publication called Forum, I've got a rather lengthy article in the next edition that talks about this very thing, what the purpose of education and the current curriculum.
If you can give me the link, we'll make sure that link is at the end of the video, if it's
Okay, well,
available.
it's not published yet. It's the
Okay.
next edition. So when it comes out, I'll let you
Let
know.
us know and we'll plug it on here. Okay,
Okay.
well, a longer chat than normal, but a really interesting one. Thank you for stepping in, Adrian. It's always
Pleasure.
a pleasure to have you. And also, Adrian, you're going to be receiving a rather different Frankenstein chat gift coming down
Ooh.
the line. So you will be the recipient of the first one because people that come back to chat to us, they're going to get a slightly different gift. So I'll wait.
Brilliant.
That enjoyment is probably going to come to you sometime next week. And it'd be great if you could take a photo and put it on Twitter somewhere. But anyway,
I
thanks,
shall do that.
everybody. Thank you, Stan. We'll be
All right,
back next
cheers.
Friday. And all being well, we'll see you all then. So thank you.
Okay.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.